It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. We've got lots to talk about. That new Disney hotel where you get to play a Star Wars character, the search for Uber's CEO, and of course, tonight is Game of Thrones. We'll talk about it with our panel. Devendra Hardwar is I Love Devendra from Engadget. He's a total geek. We've got Georgia Dow from iMore.com and the return of Jill Duffy from PC Magazine. Plus, Leo will wear a daisy hat. It's all coming up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 623, recorded Sunday, July 16th, 2017. Binders full of CEOs. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Captera. Captera is a free and easy-to-use software comparison site with over 400 categories of business software to choose from and thousands of reviews from actual software users like you. Visit Captera.com/twit today. And by WordPress. WordPress powers 28% of all websites, including mine. Get 15% off your new website at WordPress.com/twit. That's WordPress.com/twit. And by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For my special offer, go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and enter Twit. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you could post to 100-plus job boards, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we talk about the latest tech news with the best tech journalists in the biz. We got a great lineup for you. Devendra Hardwar is here from senior editor at Engadget, and he came back from the beach just to do this show, so thank you.
Oh, yeah. Straight here from the beach.
Wow. That's dedication. I appreciate that, Devendra. Did you take the subway or did you walk?
I took the subway. It's I'm right on the queue, so it's actually 25 minutes for me right from the beach. So
nice.
I should go more often. So
you don't think of Brooklyn as like being 25 minutes from the beach.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. Brighton
Beach. I mean, Coney Island's there. Brighton Beach is there. The nicer beaches are further away. But if you just want like a quick trip, any New Yorker can get down there pretty easily.
Pretty sweet. Also glad to have Georgia Dow back in a new environs because... I didn't realize you had a rustic home. I thought you lived in a white box for most of the time I've known you.
Exactly. Like this is my other area of basement, which is kind of, you can see.
She's in the basement.
It's like
buying a bigger home because they need more room for VR?
That could be true. Wow. My kids are also growing, so I have that as well. But
you can't keep them in the closet
anymore. One of
the
things we've already told the real estate agent who knows nothing about VR is we need...
Yeah, tell him
15 by 15 foot rooms.
And her mind is reeling. She's, what the hell are they up to? iMore.com, of course, and Georgia is also a psychotherapist who does really great videos at anxiety-videos.com. And we'll talk about those a little bit more later on. And we're really glad to welcome back somebody we haven't seen in a while. Jill Duffy of PC Magazine is here. Hi, Jill.
Hi, how are you?
It's not completely my fault. I'm great. You were living in India, Chennai, for the last 2 years, but you're back.
That's right. Yeah. So I'm in the Bay Area for a month just to kind of chill out. And then I'll be headed over to the East Coast for a couple of months.
And then Bucharest.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. I love Budapest. Is that near Bucharest?
Not especially close.
Oh.
No.
Same country.
So. But you know what? No, different country.
Bucharest is Romania.
Romania.
Are you Romanian? Yeah. Is that why you're... She's Polish,
no.
So she knows. Somebody in the audience is saying she went like this. Mm-hmm. Bucharest is
but
in
you know
Romania.
What? It's Europe, and anywhere in Europe is never more than like a 2 or 3 hour flight. So everything is closer.
Bucharest sounds exotic and fun, doesn't it? That sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Well, welcome back, and I'm so glad we could get you on. Devendra offers us our first story of the week. I didn't even know about this. Disney announced...
It was just announced yesterday,
A brand new hotel, a Star Wars hotel, where every guest gets a storyline. It's like Westworld. This is going to be where, in L.A.?
It sounds like the Orlando, so at Disney World, but it's going to be part of the new Star Wars lands that they're building, Galaxy's Edge. And that whole thing is going to be a real interactive thing as well. But this hotel sounds insane. Like, as soon as you get there, you could get costumes, you'll get a custom storyline, it'll follow you throughout your entire trip there. You look out a window, you'll be looking at space.
The windows don't show the actual place, they show space. Wow.
Yeah, just like Westworld, I guess. But yeah, I think the idea is that you're basically on a starship leaving Earth with everyone, you know, in the hotel with you.
Disney, of course, owns the Star Wars franchise, and they've opened big Star Wars amusements in their parks, or about to.
That's what's coming, right? Yeah. So the Galaxy's Edge is the Star Wars lands. They're going to have all sorts of different rides, and they gave us more of a taste of it at D23, their expo in Anaheim. And it's interesting, too, that they talked about this, you know, ahead of Comic-Con. Kind of shows that, you know, the lessening impact of a big event like Comic-Con when Disney could just announce it themselves.
This would be a natural. Isn't that always the way it is, though? There was Comdex, mm-hmm. and then people said, we don't need a Comdex. Yep. And then was CES. Now we don't need CES. Apple used to have all these conventions. Now they do it all themselves. Well, you know, if you're a big company, if you're Disney with a big story, you don't need to do this mm-hmm. at a convention. You don't want to do it at a convention. You want to do it where you're going to get own all the press.
Definitely. Control the story completely, from start to finish.
Yeah. Will you stay in the Star Wars hotel when it opens?
I'm excited by it, although I feel like, we haven't learned anything from Westworld, right? Like, there are going to be actors there. There are going to be people following you. There are going to be droids. And, it's only, you know, eventually we'll have, like, intelligent robots at hotels like this and experiences like this. So we're kind of getting there, I guess, starting with this thing.
What could possibly go wrong?
Isn't it basically a murder mystery cruise? Only pretty you much. Don't have to be on a boat?
Exactly. Yeah. We're just going all the way there.
I'm all in. This sounds great.
The problem with a murder mystery cruise on a boat is you can't get off the boat.
You can get off. It's very defined.
But then you're the murder.
Everybody's with you for the same amount of time. So at least you have that. You have like a narrative arc that's going to hold together. Whereas if you have guests checking in at different times, you've got to somehow manage
it's challenging.
That, right?
Like, yeah. Interesting.
But yeah, it's just mm-hmm. LARPing, right?
It's LARPing.
It's basically just LARPing for adults. Yeah. It's a big playground for adults. And the Star Wars, like, the land sound cool, too. Like, you could run into people. Like, you could run into Chewbacca, I think, was one example. And he could give you a mission, send you on, like, the Millennium Falcon ride. And depending on how well you do there, you could get rewarded with more credits for the actual theme park. You could get yelled at. And I think they can even send bounty hunters after you, like chasing you throughout the theme park, which sounds really awesome.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I think that some people may get too enthused with this. That's my only worry, is that some people are going to get too excited and ruin it for everyone else. So you have to go soon.
Star Wars guy will be there with his laser.
Like all those adult fights that break out at Chuck E. Cheese's.
Really?
Right?
Is that true?
This is like a big thing. Yeah. This is like a big thing that happens, is the Chuck E. Cheese's crowd, the parents, are just kind of like notoriously get into these blowout fights.
Oh,
you got to
wow.
watch some YouTube videos sometime.
It's mostly because they're depressed that they're at Chuck E. Cheese, I would expect.
Yeah. No, and there's child's taking tickets, and it becomes territorial.
It's Five Nights at Freddy's or something. Wow, that sounds like a nightmare showdown at Chuck E. Cheese. Let's talk about some serious tech news. Marissa, Kara Swisher has an article in Recode. As you know, they're looking for a new CEO at Uber, with Travis Kalanick stepping down, and everybody has been suggesting names. So Kara decided she'd check and call Sheryl Sandberg, COO. No, sources say she's quite happy with her current position. And frankly, who would really want to be CEO at Uber? Susan Wojcicki, who's running YouTube, happy, loving her job, also very rich. Sources said Wojcicki's not keen on playing cleanup for a lot of naughty tech boys. How about Disney COO Tom Staggs or former Ford CEO Alan Mulally? She says, no, Staggs doesn't want to move or wade into the muck. Mulally told me flatly on the record he has no interest and is very happy with his board seats. Wow, it just goes on and on. Monica Lee, the head of Thrive Global. Zero interest. Oh, this is from Monica Lee, who's the comms director, talking about Arianna Huffington. Arianna, I'll say it in Arianna's voice, has zero interest in this hero role. And in fact, as a chair, oh, I shouldn't do that. You work with her, don't you, at AOL, Devinder? I'm sorry. As fact, as the chair of the board search committee is fully engaged in finding the best CEO for Uber. So she's busy. What about Marissa Meyer?
She's used to trying to save a failing company, I guess. Yeah.
I think that she's already been bitten by that one, though.
Yeah, maybe. Yes. Multiple sources.
I would assume she's like, nah.
Multiple sources say no. Marissa has zero background in complex real-world logistics. That's what Uber would require. A leadership record at Yahoo that's questionable. Anyway, who is going to be the game continues. Who is going to be the CEO? Who would want that job? I think it's probably high risk, high reward, though, right? If you did well, you'd make some money.
It would just be funny if this role just stayed open for so long, because it's like it's nuclear, right? It's radioactive. You don't want to touch this because, yeah, you could potentially save the company. But who really wants to jump into that mess, too? Like, how do you save a culture that's, you know, flawed fundamentally?
You'd have to pick someone that was in a bigger mess to want to choose that as a risk, right? Like, the problem is they chose people that were doing really well in their careers. Why would you risk that when you're doing really well for all of this bad press and negativity that you'd have to clean up? So you'd have to pick someone that was either really into huge risk for fun, which is a really small pool of people, or someone that's just doing worse and wants to, you know, make a break.
According to the New York Times, the applications are flooding in. Mike Isaac writes, Uber offers a thankless job and the applications flood in because, I mean, it's a company in 80 countries, is multi-billion dollar evaluation, 50,000 employees. It's an opportunity if you can turn it around. He doesn't say who's applying.
It's Bob from the corner store.
Well, it's kind of funny that you could even apply for a CEO job. It's kind of interesting, right? Who do you call? And what does the application look like?
That almost sounds like counter messaging.
Yeah.
To like you leak the story like, oh, no, we're not having trouble.
Oh, we're flooded with applications.
Yeah. We got tons of CEOs. We got binders full of CEO applications, guys. So
binders.
Yeah, that would be the counter message I would want to send out.
You nailed it. So Game of Thrones is tonight.
Yeah, I have my shirt.
Let me see. What does it say? Uh-huh. Winter is coming. Winter's here, baby.
Yeah.
Oh, I say, are you the one with dragons?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So I watched the last episode of last season just to remember. I've forgotten everything.
I watched the entire last season. Yeah. I forgot most of it.
It's been so long. She did what? He did what? So, but now I'm caught up. I'm ready. Be exciting tonight. So the question asked in the New York Times, as Game of Thrones returns, is sharing your HBO password okay?
Well, I think there's only one password, right? Like, aren't we all just sharing it around?
So
that's great.
Jill, why would you want to buy HBO, a cable subscription? You're only going to be here for a little while.
Ah, but if you turn on some VPN and whatnot, you can stream all kinds of good American TV no matter where you are in the world.
Ah, good point. Is that how you did it in India? Were you able to watch all this stuff in India?
Yeah, some really interesting stuff happened with VPN, though, in the time that I was there. So a bunch of services would start to recognize if you had VPN on and cut you off. And banks are really good at that, too, because they've got to be careful of suspicious activity, even if you have a VPN on. So they would also notice that you had it on and ask for two-factor authentication or say that you had to call the bank.
So it was the content providers that were trying to block the VPN providers.
But then the VPN services said, aha, we're going to come up with a new mode. The service that I use came up with what they call chameleon mode that says the other party can't detect that you're using a VPN.
What do you mean? I'm in Indianapolis. What do you mean? I'm not in Chennai. Right. I'm in Indianapolis.
It's like, everybody's just coming at it from a different angle, which I think is great for the technology because it's pushing people to do new things and figure out new ways of providing this service.
Right.
And it's forcing the content providers to realize that they have people sometimes all around the world who are legitimate customers and do want to continue consuming content or, you know, managing their online finances. So it's been really interesting to have to follow it much more closely than before.
So if you're in Chennai, what do you watch? What do you want? Netflix? What do you want?
I've watched all of Netflix. I got to the end. I do keep up with Game of Thrones. I love Game of Thrones. And something that I thought was interesting about this show is they're changing it to 90 minutes this season. Somebody just
Game
was
of Thrones
telling.
Is going to be 90 minutes.
It's going to be long.
Is it just the premiere? Because that's sometimes they just do that.
No,
for the special
all of the episodes are going to be longer.
Wow. Amazing.
So I think
there goes my Sunday night.
Eight.
Like that explains why they're starting at 9 because they need to start early for.
So they say that they can't fit the amount of storyline that's going into each episode can't really be jammed into 60 minutes, they're saying. So they're going to stretch it out to 90, which I think is great. Because
I'm just looking up here. It's the finale that's going to be 90 minutes, but that's still pretty crazy.
So the other episodes are going to be 60?
I assume so. Because that's just, this is a really expensive show for HBO, so they can't just all of a sudden make it super long. But yeah, the finale, and this, I think they're splitting this season too, right? Like we're going to have another half of the season or something.
Oh, I hate it when they do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because then I have to wait again and try to figure out what's going on. And really, truthfully, if I could, I would just hold off. I have no impulse control, but I would hold off and binge watch the whole thing at the end. But I
you can't do that because you're on the internet all the time.
Spoilers. Yeah.
Someone will
it's
spoil
impossible.
It for you.
You can't do that.
You can't. Then you have to stay off every single set of social media. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I have to make sure I watch it the same day of.
You do. Lisa doesn't understand. I say, no, I have to watch Silicon Valley tonight. No, you can watch it tomorrow. No, I have to watch it tonight because then everybody will be talking about it in the morning. At least we geeks have some cooler, water cooler conversations. There are some shared experiences that the rest of the country lacks, right? They're all watching different stuff. We geeks, we know what we have to watch. So
it's they've been crazy, actually with something like Twin Peaks, you know, like the water cooler conversations around all that the new season has been crazy too.
Mostly, it's like, what the hell happened?
Yeah, yep.
Do you understand it? No, do you? No, I don't understand it. Who's the woman in the log and the thing?
Oh, man. There was one, the last one that they just ended with, or two episodes ago, was one of the most like astounding things I've ever seen on television.
I'm going to binge watch it.
Yeah.
And so little things come in over the transom and I go, no. So they've exceeded. Game of Thrones has gone beyond the books now, right? Or no? Yes.
This will be beyond the books this season.
So which really asks an interesting question. So you're George R. R. Martin, the author of the Game of Thrones series. You're very happy that they made this because it's sold a lot of books for you. You've written, what, five? It's five or six? I can't remember. I stopped after three. I couldn't. I can't go on. I'll just watch the show. But now, what is he going to do? Is he going to write the books to match the show from now on? Or what's he going to do?
I was under the impression that he signed a contract with HBO that said he needed to give them the story arc to the end.
So he's told them.
There was some concern about whether he would finish the books, right. Possibly for health reasons. Oh. And so they said, you can't leave us hanging without the story. So I believe this is what it is. I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, that he's given them the major plot points to the end. And he's just going to write his books as he goes.
So he's written A Game of Thrones, A Clash of Kings, A Storm of Swords, A Feast for Crows, A Dance with Dragons. That was 2011. Now, there's been nothing still to come, The Winds of Winter and A Dream of Spring, but those are, he's in process. But that's what the TV show is going to cover.
Yeah, and he said in interviews too that the show's the show and the book is the book. And he doesn't control what happens on the show. He just kind of gave them some basic ideas because there are characters and there are big arcs that happen in the books that we'll never see in the show, like in some really important ones.
And
too.
vice versa, right? There's characters in the show and stories in the show that are really whole cloth. 60 million copies he's sold of those five books so far. That's a successful, and I don't know how much the show is making HBO, but it's obviously very important to their success. All right, that's what we'll be watching. That's what the geeks will be watching tonight. Don't bother us.
We got to end the show on time, Leo. I got to get out of here.
Well, it's a good point because it starts at 6 o'clock Pacific, right? 9 p.m. your time. Oh, we'll definitely be done by then. Speaking of VPN.
Are you excited about the spinoff series? Is that going to be horrible?
Wait a minute. There's a spinoff?
There's going to be a whole, they have in the production, I think, five different ideas that they're going through and they're going to choose one that's going to become a spin-off series for when it's done.
Because it's all going to be over HBO soon, right?
So. Yeah.
Yeah, it's too soon for HBO.
Yeah.
It could be cool. I mean, like, I think of, like, Better Call Saul, right? Which is the spin-off prequel
that was very
from Breaking
good.
Bad.
Yeah, that was
And
very
that
good.
Show has ended up being better than Breaking Bad, yeah. I think, in so many ways. Yeah. So there's the potential to do something good, but also it does sound like HBO just wants to keep this, you know, milking this cow forever.
So I'm thinking about your story about, Jill, about using VPNs in India to watch American television. China has announced that by February 2018, you will not have access to a VPN in China. It's an interesting technical challenge, I imagine, but it's also an interesting story. The Chinese government's known that people have been using VPNs in China to get around the Great Firewall so that they can, you know, see things like Facebook and Twitter and probably watch TV shows and all sorts of things. And I was always told, even, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, that the government knew it, but they weren't worried so much about the elites using VPNs. They were worried about the kind of the mass of the population finding out what was going on in the world outside. Maybe now they're worried about everybody, or maybe VPNs have become more commonplace. So they're going to the idea is that if you get internet service in China, you get it from China Mobile, China Unicom, or China Telecom. Those services will block VPNs. I don't know how they're going to handle chameleon mode. I understand this. This underscores how difficult it is for a country these days to isolate their population from the outside world.
Wonder if that's what it's really about, or if it's more about surveillance.
Dissidents.
Yeah.
I think that the latest statement from the China's Ministry of Industry said that their authorized VPNs will still be allowed. So maybe it is about surveillance, because then they can still surveil who they want.
Authorized means they can watch what's going on inside the tunnel.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And so it's not.
That would make sense. Yeah, that would make sense. Well, we'll be getting that soon, I'm sure. Well, it is. It's part of an overall trend across the world to break encryption, to make sure that people can't go dark, that there's nothing you can, no communications you can have that the government can't see. And it's in China now, but you got to wonder. There's clearly a move afoot in the West to do the same, similar things. Let's take a break. We're going to come back, and then we'll talk about Google releasing 20 million bacteria-infected mosquitoes in Fresno. I kid you not. That's the story. But first, a word from Capterra. If you are in the business of, like, maybe your boss said, Smithers, find us some software and find it quick. If your job is to find software for your business to use, you may be challenged by this, because what are you going to do? You're going to Google it and then just get a random listing and then go read as much as you can on the site? Can I recommend Capterra instead? Capterra is a directory of business software with an amazing collection, 200,000 user reviews, 400 categories, thousands of products in every category, from construction to church to CRM to medical practice to membership management, performance appraisal, learning management. Let's say you're looking, you need help desk software. So you go to capterra.com/twit and you look at, here's a list. All the help desk software is here. But we're going to get even better. You can always look at the most popular, the top 20 most popular, but I think this is an even better way. On the right, say filter the results. I only want 4-star and up, but I also would like to specify 10 to 50 users. And what do you want? You want incident management? You want a knowledge base? You want live chat? You want a service desk? You want ticket management? Pick the features you want, click filter results, and then you're going to get a listing. We've narrowed it down to 35 products, Freshdesk, Samanage, Freshservice, SysAid, that do exactly the things you need. And then even better, click the box that says add to compare, and you can compare up 4 different programs and get all the features in a table, and then read the reviews, hundreds of thousands of reviews from actual users. They're very careful at Capterra to make sure that those reviews are real reviews, not from competitors, but from actual users, you're going to get all the information you need to make a reasonable choice. Now, probably by now you've said, all right, that sounds great. How much? Free. This is a free, easy-to-use software comparison site. There's no registration, no obligation. You will not get emails. You will not get phone calls. It's a service from Capterra.com, the smart way to find business software. Everything you need. So just if you've got to do this, please start at Capterra.com/twit. Millions of people, some of the biggest companies in the world, have used Capterra, and they continue to use it every month. Find the software that will save you and your business time every day at Capterra.com/twit. We thank them for their support of this week in tech. Joining us today, Georgia Dow from iMore.com in her rustic basement. And there's some serious concern in the chat room about your ceiling, whether it's asbestos, but I think the consensus
it's like some old stucco thing. I'm okay, but thank you.
You see how you're letting these people into your life. Also with us, Jill Duffy wisely is sitting in front of a completely blank wall. We can't tell anything at all about Jill.
Where am I? Who am I?
Nobody knows. We just know you're going to Bucharest.
Or so I say.
And you'll find her writing at PCMagazine.com and, of course, Fast Company as well. And it's always great to have you. Jill's beat covers a lot of areas, but particularly time management, fitness, things like that. Have you tried a Peloton yet? Have you done a review?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Lauren Good did a good one, and it kind of convinced me to get one. And I have to say, I love it. It's the spin cycle that's got an internet. It's got a big Android tablet on it, and you've got live classes from Brooklyn you can watch.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Anyway, just putting in a plug, something you might want to try just for a review. Also, Devendra Hardawar is here. Let me ask Devendra, what phone are you using these days?
I'm going to hold on to my iPhone 6S until, like, it dies because I need a headphone jack, and I think Apple's being very dumb about this whole thing.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, I'm a big Android fan, and I carry a Pixel as well as an iPhone.
Oh, yeah. I love the Pixel XL.
I love it, but I am increasingly worried about Android. I'm curious what you think about all this because you cover this subject. Mm-hmm. Android security. Is it becoming an issue to the point where it's not safe to use an Android phone anymore?
I don't know. Is there something specifically you're wondering about?
First of all, we keep hearing about malware. And the biggest issue is, and the reason this came up for me, somebody was calling today, has a Motorola phone. Now, Motorola makes a very good Android handset. He has a G. It hasn't been updated since April. No security patches. And he's still running 7.0, the current version 7.1.2. And now with the Pixel, we get the updates. One of the reasons that I use a Pixel and won't use other brands is because I want those updates. I feel safe with the updates, but I really think more than a majority, 90% of Android users are not up to date. They're not being protected. And even if you have a Samsung phone, you know, you may be a month or two behind the security patches. My S8 is still 7.0. I really wonder if it's time to start thinking, and I see a lot of security experts starting to say, so here's why I'm wondering. Black Hat is this week, next weekend is coming up. A number of people said you'd be insane to bring an Android phone to Black Hat.
I wouldn't bring anything to Black Hat. I mean, I wouldn't bring anything with the radio turned on. Like, I'd bring a tiny little, a dumb phone or something, but you got to be really careful about anything. But yeah, I think the fear is warranted, and we've been talking about Android updates for so long, and the manufacturers have had so long to kind of speed up their update cycles, and I think even Google's brought this up to companies, and I haven't seen a huge improvement. Maybe if things get worse, things have to get worse before they get better, so there will probably have to be some sort of big malware attack that affects, millions of phones before they actually step up their game.
But I think the problem is even if that happens, Google doesn't have the means with which to update most of these Android phones.
They don't. Yeah. All they can do is
please,
try to set rules moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. When you were in India, I'm sure, Jill, what did you bring a phone to India?
I brought an old unlocked iPhone that I could kind of trash and not worry about. And then I got a OnePlus 2, which
nice.
I know is
those are good
two
phones.
Or three. Yeah. 2 or 3 years old now, but it's a nice device to have something To take nicer photos than an old iPhone and just to play around with some Android hardware.
But I bet you, as you looked around, you saw a broad variety of inexpensive Android phones. Not so many iPhones.
So here's the thing. People ask me that a lot about what did I see in India. And India is just a strange place because people who have money, at least in South India, tend to be very private. So you don't see, you don't interact very much with people on the street. It's just a very different culture. And then people who have inexpensive phones, you're often talking about flip phones. And especially among the very poor people, something we forget about in the U.S. is that I think somewhere around 24% of Indians' population is illiterate. So what good is a smartphone if you can't read or write?
Oh, wow.
Right? Yeah. So the flip phone still makes sense in a lot of places where or when you're communicating with a lot of different people in different languages, right? Like maybe you can speak them, but you can't write all of them. So there are a variety of reasons why there's no one phone that stood out to me. A lot of people had OnePluses, I guess. People definitely had more non-iPhone phones than iPhone phones. But there was no one phone that stood out to me. There was no one trend that stood out to me. There's such a huge variety of different people, different socioeconomic groups, different languages, different literacy levels, that there's just no uniformity whatsoever.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, they have very strong tariffs. So unless you make a phone in India, it's hard to get it into the country. And I think OnePlus does. And Apple's Foxconn has said they're building an Indian plant.
Yeah, I think that's the plan, is that they're going to start manufacturing some iPhones in India. I'm not sure of the details.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I think that this is the heterogeneity of it, and the fact that you've got a lot of inexpensive Android phones, particularly in areas where people can't afford more expensive phones, is a big cause for concern when we talk about Android security. And there's issues we've been talking about on security now. There's issues like with, for instance, Facebook has this, those chat heads, right? Those bubbles that come up. You don't get them on the iPhone because Apple won't let you do that kind of thing. You can't modify the user interface. But on Android, when somebody chats with you on Messenger, their head pops up in a little bubble that you can move around, or you can tap on to open the message. And it's a kind of neat notification, except it relies on a feature in Android devices, the ability to write on top of existing applications, that is a massive security problem. It allows people to fake websites and fake forms, and to get the data from a form. You might be on what you think is your bank's app, but instead you've got a chat head like technology putting the form there, and you're filling it in and sending it to the hacker. And Google's kind of between a rock and a hard place. They would like to turn this write over feature off, but they've said it's not a bug, it's not a flaw, because so many apps use it, particularly the Big Blue app, the most important app on most phones. They can't turn it off. So there's some significant problems, I think, with Android. And I don't think Google's really addressing these issues. And I think you're right, Devinder. Mm-hmm. I think what's going to happen is at some point there's going to have to be a big mess.
It's kind of a shame. I mean, I've been thinking about IT cybersecurity, too, especially after all these ransomware attacks. And I just did a piece in Engadget as well. Just like, what could we do about this? I spent several years working in IT as well. And I get that mentality that you can only update so much. You can't update to the newest operating system all the time because of legacy support, or your institution isn't going to give you enough funding to do all the upgrades you need to do. And, there are possibilities. Like, a lot of people are just waiting for, like, one big attack to happen to make all the companies kind of wake up and invest more in cybersecurity, and to make make governments pay more attention to. Some people think regulation is probably the better answer, and that maybe more of where we need to go. If you think about cybersecurity in the vein of something like seatbelts, and security for cars, when seatbelts were being, when they were first being discussed, a lot of car companies, especially Ford, I think, really fought against it as something that would like hurt innovation in cars and hurt consumer choice. And it's seatbelts. They save lives. So if companies can't even agree about that, like, I wonder what it would take for cybersecurity to really happen.
Well, and I wonder if a government can make a regulation that makes any sense at all, and it has.
Well, the seatbelt thing did happen, right? They started a commission, a automotive safety commission. They fought for it, and it took a while, but now it's a standard thing. We kind of take it for granted.
And it saved millions of lives, or at least at least hundreds of thousands of lives.
Yeah.
The problem with the government regulating, though, would be that the government would say, listen, we also then want you to give us the keys.
Right.
Yep.
And we already know that that doesn't work out well.
Right.
And so then that becomes a really difficult issue because I can understand why governments would want that. But it just then leaves us still in an insecure place. And if you have a great government, that sounds wonderful. But anyone can have, you know, governments change.
Yeah. It's we're in a really weird spot around cybersecurity in general. And I just think when WannaCry happened, you know, the NHS was attacked and things were shut down and hospitals had trouble even functioning. Like an attack that at that point, human lives are at risk as well. I wonder how much further it could go.
You mentioned in your article that New York has cybersecurity regulations.
Yeah. For financial companies. Yeah. For like big financial institutions. And a lot of people fought against that, too. But you know, we don't know what the result of that is. We don't know how much that's going to protect these companies, but certainly better than nothing, I'd say. Just making sure that's just about accountability. That's like somebody in your company is a cybersecurity, you know, czar. They're the person in charge of making sure you're following all these rules and making sure you're charting, you're actually following cybersecurity rules and doing all the updates and things like that, and actually logging potential risks as well. And accountability, that's a good start, at least, rather than forcing pure regulations on people.
Henry Ford II, who was the CEO of Ford in the 60s when the seatbelt laws were proposed, said, we're going to have to shut down if they make this a law. We're going to have to go out of business. So you could see the intense pressure, even on something as sensible as a seatbelt law. You mentioned one of the things in New York State, for instance, would be you'd have to disclose if there's a breach. A lot of breaches are happening that aren't disclosed, particularly in financial institutions that aren't disclosed. Requirement to disclose. Somebody in the chat room saying, couldn't you have a regulation that said if you sell an Android device in the United States, you have to have Google's monthly security patch within 30 days of the patch's release, something like that. Could you do that? That would be effective or better than nothing.
That I don't know. Go ahead.
I think that when we talk about accountability, it would have to be financially being accountable. So if you could sue a company because they let, you know, this much software out and it became some sort of a big fine, then companies would really listen. I don't think that if we're hoping that out of the kindness of, you know, their hearts, people are going to choose to make sure that their phones are really like safe. I don't think that that's going to happen. So,
Well, and then there's also the issue that the cyber is international and you can't, you can have a regulation in New York State. You can have a regulation in the United States, but you can't prevent other countries from offering services. And this is part of the problem. Actually, it's one of the good things about the encryption debate is the U.S. can block encryption. Doesn't going to, in any sense, eliminate encryption's availability.
Yeah. But we're in really sticky territory right now, right? Because when WannaCry happened, and that was, you know, due to a Windows XP flaw, right?
That was discovered by the NSA and never revealed.
And it was stolen from the NSA and hackers stole it and deployed it and used it as a weapon. Like, that's really sticky territory then. Like,
taxpayers fault is paid for the development of this exploit.
Pretty much,
And then got exploited by it.
Yep.
Yeah, so maybe we start there. Although it's hard to this is also challenging. And there has been for years a process that I don't think has ever really been fully used for revealing these flaws, and all the players come to the table and have to justify, we found this flaw, but we have to justify keeping it a secret. Mm-hmm. But there is certainly incentive to do that because you can use that now to capture a terrorist. That's valuable. At the same time, they have to assess, well, if for instance, there's actually a whole set of criteria on this that's kind of interesting. Let me see if I can find it. But things like, well, if this flaw were discovered or released, how bad would it be? How widespread would the problem be? Things like that, where they have to assess that and say, well, maybe maybe you have to balance capturing a terrorist versus bringing the nation's infrastructure to its needs and which to its needs.
And a lot of these things may not even be as concrete as capturing a terrorist, right? Government told these exploits to just use them against the competition, like use them against their rivals or even sometimes allies, like. Yeah, it's really sticky territory, and we don't quite know what's up yet. Like, after Stuxnet, right? Like, I think the entire game has changed when it comes to, like, international cyber warfare, and we've seen a lot of countries kind of deploy their own things after that. So, yeah, there are a lot of conversations we need to have. I think there's probably more of a need to have more dialogue around cyber warfare and cybersecurity, and countries are talking. There's been, like, talks between the U.S. and China when Obama was president, and we don't know where much of that stands now. Companies like Microsoft are talking about doing something like a digital Geneva Convention, because we may need that. We need some sort of agreement for everybody to play on the same ball field, basically.
The process, I couldn't remember the name, it's called the Vulnerabilities Equities Process. It was proposed in the Obama administration some years ago. And has not been widely used, although it is around there. In fact, the latest from the current administration is, well, we're going to let the NSA and other intelligence communities decide what they're going to reveal. But the idea existed in government that there should be this conversation about these vulnerabilities and what the pros and cons are of releasing them or telling the companies, telling Microsoft, for instance, to patch it. So these are the list of considerations. This was released in 2014, but presumably is still being used when applying the vulnerabilities equities process. For instance, how much is the vulnerable system used in the core internet infrastructure and in other critical infrastructure systems in the U.S. economy or in the national security systems? Does the vulnerability, if left unpatched, impose significant risk? How much harm could an adversary nation or criminal group do with the knowledge of this vulnerability? Obviously, none of this was applied to the Samba, the SMB exploit that ended up being powering the network worm capabilities of WannaCry, or maybe they would have told Microsoft, "Hey, you got a problem with SMB." How likely is it that we would know if someone else was exploiting it? How badly do we need the intelligence we think we can get from exploiting the vulnerability? Are there other ways we can get it? I have to say, when I read this, I thought this is very fair. This is balance. This balances the need of law enforcement to catch bad guys and the need from us in the general community to be protected against vulnerabilities that could be used against us by our government, by other governments, by criminals. Could we utilize the vulnerability for a short period of time before we disclose it? can we just freeze for a little bit? Just a little bit. How likely is it that someone else will discover it? Can it be patched or otherwise mitigated? These are, I think, very appropriate questions.
It assumes, though, that the people that are making these rules and assessing this have enough technological knowledge to be able to really properly assess that.
Well, the idea was, and I don't know if it's still going on, but the idea was you bring in a committee, a panel of experts coming from law enforcement and security experts, people like Bruce Schneier, so that you get all the voices heard. You're exactly right. You have to have all that information to make that decision. My sense is it's not widely used. I mean, they put this in place, but I don't know if they use it. And clearly the NSA has been hoarding, and the CIA hoarding all sorts of exploits that have a huge impact once they were leaked.
And these days, these exploits are as valuable as having a stockpile of nuclear weapons.
You can do a lot with them. Yeah.
In a lot of ways, much more so, because there's not the same type of fallout. You're not going to get the same negative press, and you can get much more information and control full systems of government through this.
Google's Pixel will be coming out. We're going to see, I think, before. So Apple's calendar stuff here. We're in July. Apple will probably announce the iPhone 10th anniversary edition in September if they're on the schedule they've been using for the last 5 or 6 years. Last year, Google and Samsung, right before the Apple announcement, announced the Pixel and the Samsung Note 7 because they wanted to get it before Apple took all the air out of the room. So I'm going to think that in the next month, and that's what the rumors say, by the way, we're going to see announcements from Samsung on the Note 8. Probably, I think, August 23rd, you guys said, I think Engadget was going to be August 23rd. And the 2017 Pixel, which we're already seeing some strong rumors. This is an image from Android Police that they say is an accurate representation. We're highly confident is an accurate representation of Google's 2017 flagship phone. This is the Tymen device. There are at least two Pixel phones coming.
All I want is them to get rid of that stupid glass thing from the back.
Yeah, it looks like they're not. It's smaller, though. There it is on the right. And the fingerprint reader is right below it. That's for antennas, right, Devendra?
I think so. But it's also, we've solved this problem, or a lot of other manufacturers have. So I don't quite understand the need for this. But I really like the Pixel phones. The Pixel XL is my go-to international Android phone. And it's held up. So having a version that's a little less bezel around the front, that's very nice.
And the story was it was rushed and it wasn't really ready to go and it wasn't waterproof and didn't have wireless. Mm-hmm. There were things missing that they would presumably add. This is like everybody else's new phones is going to be almost bezel-less design. It's going to go edge to edge. LG is supposedly going to make it, which is good news because they do. Mm. The LG G6 is a very nice device. It looks like a single camera, though, not the twin cameras you see on the G6 and the iPhone 7 Plus. Although the Pixel cameras are very good. Don't know what pricing will be. Now, there are other phones. For instance, Andy Rubin's Essential. In fact, there was some news with Essential, which had Andy Rubin had promised at the Recode conference that we would see his Essential phone in 30 days. And that was in June, and we haven't seen it. And now the newly hired chief marketing officer at Essential is gone, just quit. Maybe trouble at Essential?
Yeah, I mean, that whole thing always felt a little like vaporware to me, and I don't understand why Andy Rubin's big solution to smartphones is to build another smartphone that looks very similar to all the others. So, yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. I put in a pre-order, but I haven't heard anything for them. USA Today says Sprint will be the one carrier they'll get, and that's not good news because that means very few people will know about this phone. If it's not in the carrier stores, nobody hears about it. It's also a bezel-to-bezel, an edge-to-edge bezel-less phone with a little notch cut out for the camera, the front camera, which is a little weird, but hey, there you go. All right, we're going to get to iPhone 7 rumors, since nobody's got excited about the Pixel rumors, but George is all excited about the iPhone, including this rumor that it will have a mirrored case or a mirrored finish, one of the four colors available. What do you think?
That does look beautiful. I like it. I could use it to put on lip gloss. it'll bother me to have fingerprints all over it, so I'll be cleaning it all the time. Now I have to worry, do I get a case? Do I not get a case? I like it. I think it looks great.
Rumored that we'll have a faster, I think this is no surprise, A11 processor, some form of wireless charging, and of course at least one of these will have an OLED screen. Apple's been buying all the OLED screens it could find, and because of this OLED screen may not have a fingerprint reader. They may be abandoning the fingerprint reader in favor of face recognition / iris recognition. And I'm sorry, Devendra, I don't think there's going to be a headphone jack on this one.
It's terribly sad, too, because if you go back to why they dropped the headphone jack with the iPhone 7 was to make more room for 3D touch, right? To have a slightly bigger 3D touch module in there. They haven't done anything with that. It just feels like we lost a key feature for no real reason. It's terrible. It's sad. If Samsung can put a headphone jack in the S8 and the S8 Plus and Apple can, I don't know.
We're not probably getting back the headphone jack. I was with you, though. I did miss it.
The iPhone 7 is the best-selling iPhone ever. Everybody said, we don't need that.
I think a lot of people just upgrade too, but it's less of a, I'm sure it's less of a problem to some people, just on a fundamental level, the person in me, the tech, helper in me who wants to defend consumer rights and stuff, losing that seems like a big deal. And I'm using the Beats X most of the time with my iPhone, so I've actually pretty much gone wireless, but I have nice headphones. I'd like to be able to plug them in without another extra dongle for no reason. That's really the big problem.
I also don't think that Apple has solved the issues Bluetooth still has. Bluetooth,
yeah.
I'm using AirPods with an iPhone 7 Plus. That should be the perfect solution, right? It randomly switches from the AirPods to the phone. It disconnects. Every person goes silent. I don't make many phone calls, and I have so many problems with this. I feel like they haven't fixed the Bluetooth thing. It's just, I rarely can do a phone call with my AirPods and my iPhone.
I've noticed that with the BeatsX too. Like sometimes I'll accept a call and it'll go straight to the BeatsX. If I make a call, sometimes I have to choose it manually, and I don't understand the logic between doing that.
Yeah. Somebody's in the chat room says, "Oh, Devendra, there is a headphone jack. You just have to use an adapter." Yeah, I don't think
that's just an adapter.
It's just another dongle.
Well, if you think about like other ways that Apple has taken away sort of standard features, right? So do you remember when the iPhone first switched to that Lightning? Is it called the Lightning plug? Right, and everybody was like, "Why wouldn't you just make it micro USB? Just be like everybody else." Or they started taking away the Ethernet ports on the MacBooks. Everybody was like, "Why would you? I don't want to have to buy a $30 connector." But Apple has kind of staked its claim, or you know, put its flag down and said, "We're going to do things our way. We're going to have proprietary pieces on our technology, and that's what we're going to do." And people continue to buy the devices, so why should they?
There's no incentive to change,
right? Yeah, exactly.
Although
go ahead, Leo.
It's my contention that that's actually bad for Apple, and you've seen this happen before. When you have a fabulously successful product at a company, and the company makes tons of money on it, what that ends up doing is hurting the company because there's no pressure at all to innovate, to improve, and they end up coasting downhill. And I'm absolutely convinced that's what's happened to Apple. The iPhone was too successful. It was bad for Apple.
Well, we need, like, I think especially what happens at this point where it's like they've innovated, they've done so well. This is a point where you kind of need to, like, step back and do something completely different. I don't think the Apple Watch was that. And my bigger worry is Apple betting on big features that nobody really cares about and that it doesn't even really fully
look
support.
At the touch
like 3D
bar.
Touch.
Or 3D
the touch.
Touch
bar.
Touch
bar.
These are gimmicks.
They're gimmicks. Yeah, nobody I know really likes that. 3D Touch, I wanted to love so much. Apple itself killed that by not giving developers enough access to it. So it's like, make up your mind. If you're really going to invest in these features, like, let us do more with it. Let developers show them off in new ways. It took a year for 3D Touch to really be upgraded for devs. And then even then, like, they had to add better 3D Touch hardware to even enable some of these features, which left the earlier people in the dust. The argument that Apple tends to make these changes often, killing older connections, that's there. They've done that, and they've done that successfully. I don't know about this particular one. And you talk about the Lightning Jack thing, right? They're stuck with the MacBook and the new MacBook Pros, which have USB-C connections. For a long time, those didn't have cables to even plug in, you know, the iPhone 7.
plug in your iPhone.
It's like if you can't even plug in your devices, if they can't even talk to each other, something has gone wrong.
There is a schizoid thing going on where they've got the Lightning port on some stuff and the Type-C on others.
Yep.
The story was apparently that they wanted to do something like Type-C, but it just was not ready yet. So they did Lightning. And I have to say the Lightning is a big improvement over that humongous 30-pin connector they used to have. But they're kind of out of step with the rest of the industry. So now they're stuck. And could they abandon the Lightning and put a Type-C on the next generation iPhone? That'd be a painful thing to do, and yet I think it would be the right thing to do. Make everything Type-C. That's what everybody else is doing.
And I think Apple is involved in the Type-C conversation as well. Like, in the standard. So
yes, their standard. Probably their standard.
I don't see them giving up on Lightning, but I would like to see more, I don't know, more cross-compatibility. And yeah, I'm going to hold on to this headphone jack thing for a while. Like, it's
You're not letting go, are you?
I'm not letting go. It's a problem, and it's dumb. And even a big, successful company like Apple can make dumb decisions. And yeah, I'm not going to just forget about it.
So
the problem is, with them selling so many, they're not going to care, right?
Yeah, they don't care.
We end
it's just
up
me.
Making our choices with our pocketbooks. And
that's exactly right. That's what I'm saying.
Successful. If Apple made a huge change and really innovated and it was a flop, everyone would be jumping on it saying Apple had something tried and true and why did they change it? And in the end, we really like incremental changes to products that we already use. Big jumps cause us a whole bunch of anxiety to that. And so it's a difficult position for Apple to be able to change enough to stay ahead yet not be left behind at the same time.
And
go
ahead.
My personal thinking right now, too, is I don't think Apple is the same company that could make that change. Like when the iPhone came out, that was that big turnaround. Like, oh, my God, Apple's making a phone. And it's probably going to kill the iPod in the process. And they knew it was going to kill the iPod, but they did it anyway. It's not the same company anymore. Like, I don't think the visionaries around Apple right now are there to really make those sorts of decisions. So that's the bigger problem.
I agree with you. Yeah. And every time I say that, people say, well, it's the most valuable company in the world. One analyst has now said they've raised their, they say they've raised their prediction for Apple stock. They say, I can't believe you could even say this in this day and age, that Apple is one of the most underappreciated stocks in the world. This is Brian Wright, a Wall Street analyst. It's a buying opportunity. Apple is among the most underappreciated stocks in the world. He thinks Apple's going to be a $1 trillion company over the next 12 months, and their stock price will break $200.
Yeah, and but the shareholders would mm-hmm. lose it if they did something really wild and crazy.
And that's the problem. That kind of success means there's no pressure on you to do anything right. Just keep doing what you're doing. Don't mess with it.
My big worry for Apple right now is to become, you know, bomber era Microsoft, because he kept everything going, like sales for Windows and Office and everything grew, and they got, you know, that was pure focusing on the stock performance and less about the innovation. And it took like a whole new CEO and it took a complete changing of the guard to really reshift what Microsoft is doing. And then you look at the devices coming out now, like the Surface laptop, the Surface Pro, are far more interesting than any of the machines.
The Surface Studio. That thing. This is the best thing ever.
Nice.
I love this thing.
We're living in a topsy-turvy world where Microsoft is being more innovative than Apple. It's really strange. Yeah.
I had a great conversation.
They did come out with the watch, though. They did. Like, they're,
oh, come
they're
on. The watch,
not,
Georgia. Yeah. Come
huge.
On. This is not
Listen,
a problem. This
any
is
other
not.
Company had the Apple Watch except for Apple, you'd be talking about how this was a huge, massive success. It's only because in comparison to the iPhone, it's nothing.
If but any other company come up with the Apple Watch besides Apple, they'd be out of business. The only reason this is a success is because of all you sheeple.
How can you say that about sheeple while you wear your Apple Watch?
I'm not just wearing the Apple Watch. I'm wearing the ceramic one. I spent a lot of money on this.
Leo, what are you doing?
I'm a sheeple. but it really is true. I think it really is true that this would not be a successful product had anybody else done it. But because Apple did it, it really...
And other companies did do it, and everybody else's smartwatches have
They're
failed.
All a business.
Android Wear,
Jawbone
is
changing its business entirely.
Yeah, Jawbone doesn't... Yeah, they're not going to exist anymore. It's all medical devices now. But I bought an Apple Watch. I bought an Apple Watch, and every day I look at it, and I just get angrier. Like, because they haven't really done much with it either. Like, Apple, Watch OS has gotten better, but...
Yeah, but you got Minnie Mouse on it and Mickey Mouse on it. That's good.
I really enjoy,
tapping his foot. You're still doing fitness bands, Jill. Are you still covering that beat?
Not as much. It was a little bit difficult to do from overseas. I did a handful of things. Actually, I brought this over just in case anybody wanted to see something fun that I did do.
What is that?
When you guys were all getting hats, I went and I grabbed my helmet. This is a bicycle helmet called Koros that has some speakers built into it that use bone conduction technology. So instead of having your ears... silence to traffic noise, you can hear while this conducts through your cheekbones the music or phone calls or whatever. The problem with it is it's a little heavy. So it's got on the back, there's like a battery and everything and some rechargeable ports.
Who makes that again?
But it adds weight. It's called Koros. I don't remember the full name of the helmet, but it's Koros.
And how much is it? It's the Lynx. The Koros Lynx smart Koros helmet. Lynx.
About $250, is that about right?
$200.
It's expensive. Yeah. $200.
So what it wirelessly connects to your smartphone and then bone. See, I remember bone conduction when I was a kid. That you'd put that thing around your neck. Remember the bone phone? Do you guys remember that?
No.
I don't remember this at all.
None of you were even born when the bone phone came out.
Maybe it was the name. It was the name that made it fail. Yeah.
The
bone phone.
Let me see. This is a fabric. Okay, here's the ad. A fabric cupboard tube was sold by Radio Shack. She doesn't look real happy.
I spelled it with an F instead of a P.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Yeah.
This was that's highly touted as using bone conduction. The sound transfers into your body. Was terrible. I'm surprised. Anyway, it feels like it's coming back now.
Yeah. So, I mean, the funny thing is when you actually have it on, you can just hear it like it's a little speaker. Yeah. Like it doesn't feel, and you really don't want to be smashing this against your face.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, it's a nice helmet. It's just that people who are serious cyclists, they care very much about every ounce
weight
that they add to their bike. And yeah, this is a little bit heavy. It's about three times as heavy as like a racing helmet.
Yeah. Don't worry
about getting hit.
That's why I wear my sunflower.
Sunflower would be really effective.
It has on it. The one special feature it has is when it detects an impact, it has a feature where it gives you like 30 to 60 seconds, and then your phone will immediately send a message to agency contact of your choice saying that I've detected an impact. Here's a person's GPS.
He's not moving.
So it doesn't help you before the impact, but once you're lying there, it lets everyone else know.
Share with
your
us.
Your shame.
What is that, a goldfish? What is that on your head?
This is a Magikarp. It's a Pokemon.
It's your Magikarp.
The best Pokemon. Yeah.
It's kind of weird because the carp is actually swallowing your head, but...
It's hungry. It's starving.
That's a Magikarp. I recognize it now.
It's a Magikarp.
Yeah, it's the one-year anniversary of Pokemon Go. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. I should take this off because I want to talk seriously about our sponsor right now.
Your sponsor wouldn't be happy.
I think I look good as a daisy.
Maybe they would love it. You might get more views if you're wearing the flowers.
The whole world's turned into a Snapchat filter.
For the audio-only listeners, Theo is right now looking like the center of a daisy. And he's got these daisy petals radiating from around his little face.
Say you're a daisy if you do.
You're a daisy if you do. All right, that's just disturbing. I've got children in the audience. I can't do that. All right, our show today we'll have more with our great panel. A show today brought to you by WordPress.com. That's where I hang my hat. Oh, that would be a good idea. I should make a blog for all my hats, Leo's hat blog. Because I have hundreds of them, including that daisy hat. WordPress makes it easy to create a website, whether you're creating your own personal blog or a site for your business or both. You'll make a big impact when you start your site at WordPress.com. The thing I like about WordPress, first of all, I've used WordPress for years and I hosted it myself, but I love WordPress.com. This is my site now because I don't have to update it. They update it. They keep it secure. They have hundreds of templates. They've got a fantastic a community that helps you, and of course the great WordPress help department that gives you fantastic advice and suggestions. You're never stuck. You're never alone. And WordPress.com has a front page that drives traffic to your page. So you're part of a community. You've got all the power of WordPress, but they keep it up to date for you. They do all the engineering for you. So you get the WordPress hosting, the WordPress software, built-in search engine optimization, built-in social sharing, and a 24/7 support team that's the best in the world. You're part of a community. That's why 28% of all websites run on WordPress. 28% of all sites. Some of the biggest publications in the world run on WordPress. I love it. Now, I want you to try it. We've got a 15% discount for you when you go to wordpress.com/twit. Create your website. Find the membership plan that's right for you. And 15% off when you check out on your brand new website. At wordpress.com/twit. And if you want to visit my site and kind of see what I'm doing with WordPress, leolaporte.com. By the way, I love this. HTTPS, yep, it's automatic. They support all the best technologies. I have Google's AMP turned on. It's just a simple switch to just turn it on. So if you're looking on a mobile platform, my site loads super fast. I use it for my photography. I've got embedded slideshows in here from Smug Mug. I just love it. WordPress.com/twit. So Google, this is an interesting thing Google plans to do. They want to release 20 million bacteria-infected mosquitoes in Fresno, but it's not what you think it is. This is from, Verily. Verily is the life sciences arm under the Alphabet umbrella. And apparently, we're starting to see some Zika virus in Fresno, California, Aegypti mosquito. And so they've come up with this plan. They call it, I love the name, the Debug Project. By releasing mosquitoes infected with a bacteria called Wolbachia, which is completely harmless to humans. But when those mosquitoes mate with the Aegypti mosquitoes, they infect them and their eggs cannot produce offspring. And it's a way of basically killing off these mosquitoes. And of course, male mosquitoes don't bite. So now not only do you not have Zika, you don't get mosquito bites anymore. They haven't done it yet. No word from how much it will cost. And I, you know, it's interesting because this is pure public service. I don't think there's any way to make money on this. They plan to do it in Australia. They told the MIT Technology Review they plan to do something similar in Australia next. They want to, this, I guess this will happen. Let's see. This article is in TechCrunch on July 14th. And they say, so I guess it'll happen this coming week. 1 million mosquitoes over a 20-week period in 200-300-acre neighborhoods in the Fresno area. Huh.
Yeah.
Why and would the, Google do this? Why does Verily do this? Is there a way to make money on this, or is it just
it's
goodwill?
It's data, right? Google's currency is data. Like, this will teach them a lot about deploying similar things in the future. And we've actually, I think I've heard about not the exact same thing, but other methods of, like, trying to wipe out these Zika-infected mosquitoes by using, you know, other species or other ways to, like, make their mating kind of, you know, kill off whatever is there.
That's very cool.
Yeah, and Google didn't actually, they didn't, like, do the research for this. They're just using research that other people have done. We've done the same thing to try to get rid of dengue fever, and I don't know how to pronounce some of the other viruses that mosquitoes can transmit.
Say again?
Yes.
Chikungunya. So chikungunya, dengue, and Zika are all carried by the same type of mosquito, whereas malaria is carried by a different type of mosquito.
We got to just kill all the mosquitoes. I think there's no reason why is there any justification for mosquitoes to exist?
I'm one of these skeptics on this. There have been some people who say mosquitoes are not like a keystone species. If you kill them, no other species will die off. Because that's always the worry, right?
Yeah.
Are there other species that feed on this particular
animal? Bats and birds eat mosquitoes.
Bats and birds, right. But we really don't know where else. I mean, it's just such a hard thing to study, right? Like the ecosystem does not lend itself well to the kind of typical scientific studies we do, where we isolate one or two things and we, you know, use controls because it's such a web of stuff. Right. So you don't know until you start to see the outcomes. And the other thing with using these sort of infertility type of tactics is they're not 100%. So if you release male mosquitoes that are infected with bacteria into an environment and they mate with the females and the female eggs are no longer viable, that will take care of a good number of mosquitoes, but it's not going to kill off the entire population. So does it die out? Does it dip? If it dips, how long does it dip? If they come back, do they come back more resilient? You know, which of the animals survive? There's just so many questions.
You're right. I take it back. You're absolutely right.
It makes me very hesitant. So I'm glad that they're just testing on a little population like Fresno.
Well, Omega Project says next summer we'll have a story about 20 million bats being released in the Fresno area to control the out of control mosquito population.
And when you have the bear to kill off the last one, you just wait till it's winter.
You're absolutely right. This is very human, this godlike thing. Oh, you know, just get rid of mosquitoes. What good could they possibly be?
I don't know if there's any creature that has wiped us out as efficiently besides ourselves as mosquitoes.
Or rats. Rats are not great. Don't like the rats.
Too, but it's not the rats,
it's not
actually
the rats. It's the fleas on the rats.
It's the fleas that are on the rats. Yeah. So the rats are innocent.
Well, they're not. They're not innocent. They're complicit.
You think that they chose to.
They chose to.
They didn't like us.
They're unindicted co-conspirators is what they are. Let's talk about Amazon a little bit. According to a story that came out this morning, The Verge had it and others had it. Amazon is reportedly working on a messaging app called Anytime. You know, obviously jumping on the ridiculous gap left by both Apple and Google. Apple's messages, which is perfectly good, only works on Apple hardware. So that leaves out a lot of the world. And Google just can't seem to make up its mind on messaging in any reasonable way. They took SMS out of Hangouts for people except everybody using Google Fi. They have multiple messengers. No one knows what Google's strategy is. So Amazon, I think Amazon's smart. Amazon clearly sees an opportunity. This is Anytime is a all-in-one feature-rich service that could rival social networks with a focus on messaging, voice and video calls, photo sharing. You can apply filters. Of course, you couldn't release a photo sharing app without filters. And this is an interesting quote from this graphic. This came from AFTV News. Everyone's on it. Reach all your friends just using their name. No numbers needed. I'm trying to read the tea leaves here between the lines because what I'd love to see Amazon do is release an SMS app that I could use for SMS messaging on an Android device. You're stuck, unfortunately, with Apple's messages on iOS. And then they say they'll do it on desktop, Android, iOS, so you could use it everywhere. But if they don't use phone numbers, it sounds like they won't support SMS. What do you think? How could they do that? They will have default encryption, strong encryption built in. Mm-hmm. They'll have.
It is interesting that there has been no one successor in the text messaging and messaging space, because it's been around really since the beginning of the popularity of the internet, right? Like,
right.
If you look at just even instant messaging. And I would say that the closest contender right now is probably Facebook Messenger, because it does eliminate that need for a specific phone number. You can look somebody up just by being friends with them.
They have to be on Facebook.
They have to be on Facebook, yes. But I think right now it is probably the leader that I've seen. Like, WhatsApp has kind of died out a little bit, and some of the other ones that have been popular, like Line, and then there was Wicker, and there was all these different ones.
Amazon's looking at Line and WeChat in China, because those are much more than just messaging. They're platforms. You can buy stuff. And I think Amazon is thinking, I mean, obviously Amazon's interest in this is that you could shop on it. So I think they're going to try to create a WeChat clone.
But you've got to get in there first, right? So like the way that you get in with Apple users is that people have iPhones.
Right.
And we already talked in this episode about how successful the iPhone has been from a sales point of view. Yeah. And if you have people who are signed up to Facebook, well, then you have this automatic messaging system included. So, but what's going to be the way to get those Amazon users to start adopting this new app? I mean, it's not going to be just having an Amazon account, right? Because a lot of people don't use it on their mobile device, or they're not thinking about it as a communication tool. Whereas with an iPhone and Facebook, you're already thinking about it as a communication tool. Yeah. So what's going to be their inroad? What's going to be their hook?
Yeah, I mean, Amazon does have quite a bit of a social graph. Like, they haven't really done much with it.
What if you could call Echoes with it?
Yeah. That could be a thing. Yeah.
What if you could use your Echo to message? That would be nice.
That would be super cool.
Wasn't that already announced that was coming out as a feature, Echo to Echo calls?
Echo to Echo is. Now I could have Anytime on my phone as my messaging app and message an Echo.
You could call somebody's Echo like it was their landline.
Also, in this cell window, new ways to hang out. Share your location. Okay, everybody does that. Listen to music. Order food together. Split a bill. Chat with businesses. Get super service on your terms. Make reservations. Check on your orders. Even shop. So that's a really interesting question, though, Jill. What would Amazon have to do to make this ubiquitous? And do they need to make it ubiquitous? But second, what would they do to really improve the uptake of this? How do you get?
You're not going to get a mass adoption of people installing a new app, I don't think.
Right.
Not in this.
That's
way,
Apple's
right?
advantage, because like, it comes. It
it's
is just
be something.
Yeah, it's just
right.
on the phone.
It's already.
It's got to be something that's already being used among Amazon.
If Apple would make a Android version of Messages, and they already have a desktop version on Mac, but make one for Windows, I think Messages could win this. Right? They don't seem to want to.
It depends, I guess. In all of the way we're talking about this too, like if Amazon integrated something like this right into the Amazon shopping app. That could be interesting.
Because everybody's got that.
Everyone's got that. You can see your friends' wish lists and things like that. That would be a fundamental change in the way we handle Amazon shopping and what that app could do. But
and you make
that's
deals.
One potential thing.
You go out and you make deals with cell phone manufacturers and carriers to put that app on the phone. Make it the default app. Amazon's got the money. They could do that.
Well,
they've already done that with Amazon shopping. A lot of phones come with Amazon. Even Ubuntu Linux comes with an Amazon app.
Yeah, but I think that Jill is right. There's not really a great catch. It's not fun and trendy like Snapchat is with great privacy and a breakdancing hot dog. You know, it's not already installed, which is what Apple's going to be able to deal with. And so everyone's going to use that. And Amazon, primarily people are thinking about, you know, shopping and dealing with things.
Yeah.
Like maybe if they gave you bonuses, you got Prime if you were using it. I don't know. They would have to have something that would make a difference in people's lives to be able to have that barrier to entry that I want to get it because I want this, right? Like if they gave me Game of Thrones for free, I would get it.
Right?
That would be it.
Well, you got to believe they're going to try stuff. I just feel like I would hate to bet against Amazon. They are seriously on a roll. Prime Day, which is a joke because there's no, it's not really deals. It's as good, you know, it's like going to a Costco or, you know, a big box store to get deals. It's more the appearance of deals. But it
I call it the Amazon garage sale.
Yeah. But you know, Wirecutter does this analysis and of several thousand deals, a handful were actually deals. Let me go to Wirecutter and show you the actual numbers. I mean, so it's not a really great place to get deals. However, it's very successful. They had it was the biggest Prime Day in its history, up 60% over the year before. Number one seller was the Echo.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd hate to bet against Amazon. I think if Amazon did I would look at it. I think there's a gap.
It,
well, I just think there's a gap in messaging. Well, no, but I mean, okay, so here's the thing for me. The nice thing on Android is you can use other apps as your SMS app. You can say, I want FaceTime Messenger to be my SMS app. And SMS is text messages through the carrier will come in there. So I could make, if I can make Anytime my SMS app, I absolutely would. Especially if they, if I could order stuff through that and I think it's not going to be hard for them to convince at least Prime users to do that.
I think if any other company were to try to get into the space, it would be less interesting. But the idea that, Amazon could actually give you deals or maybe give you a little bonus to your Prime account or something like that. This seems more like a logistics play than just straight up messaging, right? If they end up being the one place you go to talk to your friends, but also to order food and to share payments and do things like that. Like there's a lot of potential there. Like even food ordering right now is a really splintered market. You know, Seamless and Grubhub did merge. So they're one thing right now, but they don't dominate everywhere in America. So you go different places, you'll have to use different services. Amazon is a logistics company at this point, right? They're tied directly into our lives just based on getting us stuff. And now they're getting us stuff faster and faster. And we have instant delivery now. So I could see this being like a really useful, you know, a useful chat app that could tie into things. I know better.
My argument is Amazon's reached critical mass.
Yeah.
And now it's almost that anything they launch is going to, because of the size of Amazon and the devoted Amazon customer, it's going to be a success out of the gate.
As long as it's not like crazy hardware like the Fire Phone or something, right? This is
That's a good point. App, that was their last failure. Thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
As the Fire Phone, the Fire tablets, Amazon Music, Amazon Storage. Like they have some secret good stuff. Like Amazon Web Services is amazing and being used by everybody and is pulling in all kinds of money that we'll never know about because they don't break out the numbers in any of their reports. But I think the company's had lots of little weak flops, but they look like nothing.
I wouldn't call the Fire tablets flops, by the way. The Fire tablets, like as far as decent, cheap Android tablets, like they're actually far better than most of the other options out there. They're like the one successful Android tablet at this point, like the last ones remaining.
I think that if I had like a wish list of all of my friends on Amazon and I knew like, oh, Leo's looking for a floating bonsai tree, and I could then order it for him and get it sent to his house as a gift, that would be kind of cool and neat to be able to network that way without them knowing that I bought it for them. That might be something that would be kind of different that they could do, but
this is completely side point. But what is Jeff doing these days? Have you been to the gym, Jeff? Is that so? This is Jeff before and after. Jeff Bezos on the left, classic nerd, geeky guy. Now he's looking like Vin Diesel. What the hell? In fact, it's become a whole internet meme. Have you seen all of these?
Yep.
Here he is with The Rock and Vin Diesel. That's a crew you'd stay away from. Holy cow. What is going on with... the Terminator. All right.
He looks great.
Yeah, he's looking good. He's lifting. Yeah, yeah. 1998 on the left, 2017 on the right. It just gives me hope. That's all I'm saying. there's something ahead for me. Here's another measure of the power of the Bezos. Amazon announced a Geek Squad competitor. Best Buy lost $1 billion in its stock value. This wasn't even an announcement. Recode reported that Amazon was quietly building out a Geek Squad. Here's the graph of Best Buy stock price. That's the power. All right, let's take a little break. Devendra Hardawar is here from Engadget, senior editor. Back from the beach, relaxed, ready to run. From PC Magazine, Jill Duffy. She's back from India, and we're thrilled to have her. Nice to see you again, Jill.
Thank you.
At Jill E. Duffy on the Twitter. And from iMore.com. And am I getting that right? Anxiety-videos.com?
That it is.
Plug it. Give us a plug. And anxietyvideos.com, the place to go to learn about anxiety.
And depression and parenting and boundaries and consequences. Yeah.
A good night's sleep.
Yeah. Sleep is important.
I just
need better sleep.
One of those things under my mattress that lifts the head up and then lifts the feet up.
Does it help?
Yeah.
I just got one of those husk pillows.
Yeah. I'm all about the buckwheat.
Pounds, but they're pretty good. Yeah.
I'm all about the buckwheat. Yeah. So you see, we share tips on how to sleep better. Anxiety videos. It's great to have you on, Georgia. Our show today
brought to you.
Actually, before we do that, let's take a look at that. We made a little promo video so that for those of you who never watch any of our other shows could see what you're missing. Watch.
Previously on Twit.
I did bring something with me and I set off the metal detector.
Oh, this is amazing.
It was
a gong. It's not a gun, it's a gong.
I brought it with me.
they were wondering.
With a gong.
Windows Weekly.
You'll notice that we don't always ship everything that goes to insiders. And a lot of it is because they didn't test well. Many of our insiders are able to represent the people they help day to day. Because people say, oh yeah, I love this feature. It's awesome, but it's going to be very hard for people who I support to use.
Security Now.
There was a lawsuit which was accusing Facebook of tracking users' web browsing activity even after they logged out. However, U.S. District Judge in San Jose, California, dismissed the case because he said that the plaintiffs failed to show they had a reasonable expectation of privacy or that they suffered any realistic economic harm or loss. I'm happy to see that this didn't go any further. You know, these people just need to know how the internet works.
TWIT. For help with the technology addiction problem, call 1-800-TWIT.
Thank you.
Scott, how did you not come to wear the right shirt today?
I didn't get the memo.
Megan Maroney, what's ahead?
There's another mesh networking game in town this week. Samsung is set to release its Kinect Home smart Wi-Fi system. It has a SmartThings hub built in and will sell for $170 Ooh. Or $380 for a pack of three. Oh. The Wi-Fi network has been available in select locations all month, but will release nationwide on July 16th. We expect several high-profile tech companies to release quarterly earnings this week, including Netflix, IBM, Microsoft, Qualcomm, T-Mobile, and eBay. And finally, San Diego Comic-Con happens this week. Costumed comic book and movie fans will descend on the city in droves. Porter says many outlets, including The Walking Dead, have decided not to throw pricey parties this year. But much fun and cosplay will still be had, at least for those of us watching from Instagram. Those are just a few of the stories that Jason Howell and I will be following this week on Tech News Today. Every weekday, Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific. We'll see you there.
Thank you, Megan Maroney. Any of you going to Comic-Con?
No, I wish I was.
No.
Really?
My brother's at Comic-Con. But
yeah.
Aw.
Yeah, no.
It's pure madness, but it's sort of, it is the best, like, crazy big convention to ever go to, really.
I think it's okay that the big brands like The Walking Dead and stuff kind of don't go. I know everybody likes to see their favorite stars on stage and stuff, but I hate it when corporate influences something that's really grassroots like that. I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah. When I was going there was when the movie studios were really big into it, and they've kind of stepped back over the past few years, and I hear people just have more fun there now. But some of those moments, seeing like the first trailer for Glimpses at the Avengers or something, like, yeah, that was that's
or when they brought the BB-8 out on stage for the first time, things like that. That's cool stuff.
Yeah,
that's adorable. I like the cosplay players.
I have mixed feelings.
You could
about
go.
That.
You could go wearing the hat.
I don't think grown-ups should put costumes on and act silly like that.
Shouldn't
I just
they?
Think that that's
Isn't
kind
that
of childish.
Life's too short.
And juvenile.
There. Yeah, we need to be a little bit more silly.
I think we're way too serious these days.
I can't take you seriously though when you're wearing the hat.
It's the infantilization of America. It's like that Star Wars hotel. It's just we're all just turning into Wall-E.
We need more joy and laughter, and people need to take things a little bit less seriously. And I think that the world would be a better place.
Ships with a
no one
giant
would be able
Slurpee.
To yell at you with that hat on.
I know. I'm a sunny daisy. Jill Duffy's going, why did I agree to this show? What am I doing?
Hey, I'm with Georgia on this one. I'm all about, like, play is an essential part of life in the same way that, you know, like, our freedoms for food and sex and all kinds of stuff are important to our vitality. And I think I'm really happy about the amount of adult play, and I'm non-sexual, but, like, adult play opportunities that now exist. You know, like, there's all these grown-up gay camps now where you can go to gay summer camp and just hang out in a safe place in the woods and swim and shoot bows and arrows. And I don't know. And just that video games are finally accepted as kind of an art form that adults are allowed to engage in. And Star Wars themed stuff. And my sister took her kids to the Harry Potter world recently. And I think
I love
the adults had just as much fun awesome. There. As
that
the kids
I
did.
Love. No, I'm all
of
in on that.
Of course you embrace play
I had about 8 butter beers and went on the ride and threw up. It was awesome.
And it doesn't all need to be
butter beer all over the place.
And sold and marketed either. You know, it can be invented. It can be boredom. It can be sitting around in a park inventing a game on your own. But I'm absolutely like a proponent of that and against this ageism bullshit, Leo, that once you get older, you're not allowed to wear a game.
I'm just old. Yeah. I'm old. That's not ageist. I'm old. Our show today brought to you by I'm proud of it. I'm wearing a freaking bow tie. Our show I'm starting to look like Andy Rooney. Our show today brought to you by Stamps.com. Grumpy. Actually, Stamps.com is great. If you get grumpy going to the post office, driving around, finding parking, getting in line, and there's all these amateurs there. When you've got something important to do, you're going to love Stamps.com. You can do everything you do at the post office from your desk. You don't even have to get up, which people like me like. We can stay in our chairs and get it all done. Buy and print, of course, official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail. This is not a postage meter. Use your computer and your printer. Nothing special about this, which is another nice thing. Do you see people going? It looks like they look like small nuclear bombs, these postage meters. They get them in special cases. They bring them to the post office to get recharged with postage. That is so 1950s. That is so weird. You don't need a postage meter. It's easy. You create your Stamps.com account in minutes. It's on the web, so it works with any computer. There's no equipment to lease. There's no long-term commitment. In fact, right now, if you go to Stamps.com, click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, we've got a really great way to start using Stamps.com. Just type in the offer code TWIT when it asks for promo codes. That way they know you heard it here. You will get a $115 bonus value. $55 in postage coupons, which is awesome. They can't use them right away, but you use them over the next few months of your Stamps.com account. You will get a USB scale, which is really handy. It plugs into your computer. You can weigh anything on there, so you always have exactly the right postage. You also, of course, get a 30-day trial of Stamps.com. Click, print, mail, you're done. And unlike the post office, Stamps.com never closes. You're always able to print. And then when it's time to send that mail, you don't have to go to the post office. You just press a button and the post office comes to you. It's awesome. So get that four-week trial plus the postage, plus the digital scale. No long-term commitment at stamps.com. Click the microphone on the top of the homepage and enter our offer code TWIT. I should have worn the daisy flower for that picture on the stamps.com site. I think that would have done very well. Stamps.com. Mommy, why is that crazy man on the TV? Stamps.com. Enter the offer code TWIT. Speaking of crazy, there's a site that lets you design your own phone cases. Did you see this? And the Amazon, they let an Amazon artificial intelligence design these phone cases. My handy design. Here you go. Here's one of the popular ones. Adult diaper worn by an old man with a crutch. Cell phone cover for your iPhone 6. That's everybody's going to want that. How about this? Heroin spoon and syringe cell phone cover case. Share your hobbies with your friends and neighbors. Cheese wheel on baddie instead of table. Apparently, I don't know what, I don't even know what's happening. This one's so popular, it's temporarily out of stock. Cheese wheel on, I think they meant body instead of,
I think they meant body.
Instead of table.
He's grating the cheese.
He's grating right the cheese. Wow. How about this? Beautician hands doing depilation in woman's armpit with wax strip cell phone case.
A different one for every day.
Every day.
I want to know about those. If my phone had the case of the adult diaper one or like some sort of facial surgery, no one's going to steal my phone. No one would want to be caught.
They're going to stay well away from you too, which is can be cocaine, drugs, heaps, and lines, still life on a dark mirror. Toenail fungus. Oh. Old woman with asthma inhaler. Now, this one will really keep the thieves away. A doctor holding an endoscope. my handy design.
Most I think they're going to be more popular now than they would have been beforehand. I'm just saying.
People buying them. I'm just saying. If you could get cheese wheel on a body instead of a table, why wouldn't you? Okay. Moving along. I kind of feel like everything after that's going to be a letdown. Twitter lets you avoid trolls by muting new users and strangers. Who cares? I couldn't care less. Free speech groups. Well, you know.
Because everyone's so nice on Twitter.
It's very useful.
Yeah. Is it useful? Do you use that? Because I feel like then they're still there. They're still spewing. It's just you're not seeing it. It's
Which
like
fine.
It's like an ostrich. Yeah. Just you're putting your head in the sand saying, you can't see me now, can you?
For your mental health, I think it's great. I've taken to muting people who tend to be obnoxious in my timeline rather than blocking them.
I guess.
The block is the win for them.
Right. Then they know you blocked them.
That's
right.
True. Yeah. Right. They got to you. Yeah. I don't have enough followers to really have to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where what I do you all think about this case coming out of, I think it's being funded by the Knight Foundation and some relationship to Columbia University, where users are suing Donald Trump for him blocking them, saying that it's that Twitter is being used as a public channel for official news. And
yeah, it's an interesting story, isn't it?
It's kind of an interesting story, but I also feel like if you log out of Twitter, can't you just see his feed anyway?
No, but what they're saying is you're impeding our speech because we can no longer tweet
back. Because we can't say anything to you. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think it's a super interesting case, but I don't feel like I personally have a good, clear grasp on how it's going to go in court.
I can't wait, though. I've got to know.
It's his Twitter account that's his. It's not POTUS. It's his own Twitter account, which I think gives him a certain amount of leeway to be able to...
Highest office in the land.
Yeah. Now understand the First Amendment.
To make official announcements.
The First Amendment doesn't protect you. You know, you can't use the First Amendment argument to say, "Well, Twitter can't block me." But if the government blocks you, you have a First Amendment right to speak to the government. If the government blocks you, that violates the First Amendment. Yeah.
I think that
there's
his,
a couple of questions
the best
here.
Part is that because he uses that to actually show policy, that's where he may be in trouble. I think that if he just uses as his private account, I think that he would have been fine to be able to block whomever he so chooses because he's not using that for work. But where they may end up saying is because he does use this for actual policy and talking about different policies, he may, you know, this might become one of these things of being a public forum where everyone should be able to have a say.
It probably like this, this legal like move probably won't go anywhere. But the fact that they're doing it and can bring this up, because this is a good point. Like he is using this as a platform and he's silencing Americans by blocking them. It would be a totally different story if it was the official POTUS account for sure, though.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. It really is. the White House has said, in fact, Sean Spicer said Trump's tweets are, quote, official statements by the president of the United States, end quote.
Mm-hmm. You mean they've said something in the past that's incriminated them for, you know, the future.
Right.
It's never happened before with this man.
it's also a sad commentary on what Twitter in general and what's happening in the world at large is so ridiculous that who would have ever thought 20 years ago we would be debating. Well, can the president block people from his Twitter account?
You know, my favorite kind of twist in this whole saga is that before the presidential campaign really got underway in early 2017, I guess. Everybody was talking about Twitter and the death knell. Like, Twitter is over. Nobody's using Twitter. Twitter's not growing anymore. Twitter has no way to make money.
President Trump saved Twitter.
Exactly. But nobody's really telling that story. Like, we all just sort of forgot that Twitter was supposed to be dead by now.
Yeah.
Well, I think philosophically, like, we still don't know what Twitter is. They're still trying to figure out their business. Like, all those problems are still there. It's just a very popular platform for, you know, one guy right now.
There's also the question of if the president tweets and then deletes it, is he deleting government records? You know, you're not supposed to, as president, you're not supposed to delete your emails. Yeah. You're not supposed to. These records are public, are public property.
But isn't there, there's a...
Well, their answer to that was that they're keeping them all. The White House says, anyways, which and you know this is complete BS, but the White House said something like, "Oh no, we've got a technique that keeps them all." Like, you know, that's, you know, they just made that up. But anyway, does at POTUS block people? Or so you're saying it's only at the real Donald Trump that blocks people, not at POTUS?
I don't think he's not the only one with access to at POTUS. So I heard that this was just for his personal account.
Yeah.
And I hear that there's some organization that's actually saving all of Donald Trump's tweets, even if they are deleted. Yeah. So,
but that's not the point. The point is they're not, the White House is not supposed to delete anything.
No.
Nobody ever sued over that. That was pointed out. Six major U.S. airports now scan Americans' faces when they leave the country. Oh, isn't that nice? You're in a database if you leave the country. The Department of Homeland Security has been pushing a plan that, if enacted, would require all Americans submit to a facial recognition scan when leaving the country. The original law was to track international visitors, foreigners, but the facial scanning pilot programs are already underway at Boston, Chicago, Houston, Atlanta, New York City, and D.C., in a recent privacy assessment, the Department of Homeland Security said, quote, "The only way for an individual to ensure he or she is not subject to collection of biometric information when traveling internationally is to refrain from travel." Good Lord. I mean, I guess travel is not a privilege, although
it seems to go away from human rights and freedoms to be able to travel without having to give up.
It's not feasible.
Your face has been collected when you get a passport.
Yeah, that's true. Right. But now you're in a larger... do they put that in a database? I don't know. But now you are in a larger electronic database. And the point is, it's not just internet. You know, we know that you foreigners have no protection at all. Sorry. You're out of luck. But if the photograph captured at a boarding is matched to a U.S. citizen passport... The DHS says we discard it after a short period of time. I don't know. That's just, it seems intrusive, but what the hell, you know?
And then what happens? happens just, if something happens and you end up with like facial surgery, or I fall down and, you know, hit my nose?
Well, they'll have two Georgia Dows. There will now be two Georgia Dows in the world.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There's some neat things that happen with facial recognition, though, right? Like, I mean, it's not just matching your, like, the topography of your face. It's measuring things like the distance between your eyes and all kinds of very detailed stuff that I think if you wear makeup or change some, you know, pluck your eyebrows or whatever, it's not gonna throw it off. And there's some really neat stuff that's going on in the sort of biometric security area, right? Like, with the lifeness of the face, there's a company that does something where their solution, I can't remember the name of the company, but their solution basically was one that said you can't spoof it with a photograph because we're looking for quote unquote lifeness.
You need a video instead of a photograph.
Did any of you do anything on Wednesday for Save the Internet Day? Did you have a birthday cake or anything? We went black and white for the day. Just our stream was black and white, which we put a link on our website and on the shows, encouraged people to go to battleforthenet.com and to, most importantly, write or call your member of Congress and say we're in favor of an open internet. Apparently AT&T is also in favor of an open internet, which surprised me because I think AT&T, Comcast, and Verizon are widely considered as the three villains in the net neutrality saga. They would love to charge extra for Netflix to get to you and so forth. They don't believe all bits should be equal. So AT&T surprised everybody when they announced, oh, no, we're in favor of net neutrality. In fact, this is an article in The Verge. Somebody tweeted Nilay Patel with this picture, this screenshot from his DirecTV. Look at that. Right there on the TV, it says AT&T supports the open internet. And here it says, AT&T supports an open internet. Tell Congress to protect your internet by adapting lasting rules. So they really, AT&T, you're in favor of this, huh? So if you go to their website, they offer some canned messages you can send to your member of Congress. And by the way, you include your name, phone number, and address, which I imagine AT&T is harvesting. And you're not able to edit these messages, so you have to send them out as AT&T wants. Read them carefully. For instance, I agree with the FCC. It doesn't make sense to apply an 80-year-old regulatory scheme to the internet. There is a right way and a wrong way to preserve the concept of an open internet. I'm in favor of protecting the open internet with legislation. In other words, this is all about AT&T saying, sneakily tricking its customers into lobbying its congressmen to go ahead with Ajit Pai's decision to abandon Title II regulation of the internet. While I support the FCC's work to get rid of the rules that were harming the internet economy, really, they're harming the internet economy. They're harming AT&T's economy, I'll grant you that. I believe the only way to permanently guarantee an open internet is by Congress creating a law. So, nice try, AT&T, but no.
I mean, the idea open internet too, like a lot of these companies do co-opt that idea, right? To some, open internet means
I remember when coal-fired power plants put up conserve and conservation signs all over their lunchroom to just convince their employees, oh, no, we're all for conservation.
It's not that bad.
We're all in favor of it. We love the environment. Mm-hmm. Comcast
says, we still
says,
think clean coal is the thing.
Comcast says we're creating hysteria. You know, knock it off. Your Comcast, Verizon, and CenturyLink counter the day of action, saying net neutrality supporters create hysteria. It's all positive. Reversing the net neutrality regulation will do several positive things. Increase customer choice. Yeah, for our bottom line. Spur innovation and investment. See, they claim that, hey, if you do this, we're just not going to invest in any more internet.
And all of those government subsidies that they've benefited from.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, right. I'm not going to tell you what to think about it, but read up on it and write your member of Congress and tell them.
Support
what you
net say. Neutrality. I'll say it. Support it. Go on dial up for a day and see how happy you are.
Yeah. Well, and frankly, I don't think sites like mine and many of yours wouldn't exist if you had to pay a tariff to the internet service provider to access end users.
You won't get your Game of Thrones. Yeah. We just need to say it. You won't get your Game of Thrones.
So there. Now that's just hysterical.
And be able to just, it's true. No Game of Thrones. So just support net neutrality. There we go.
Microsoft did, not exactly the same time, but at a similar time, also put in its 2 cents. They want to create a rural air band initiative, and they want to put $10 billion in investment into it to bring internet to 2 million rural Americans, high-speed internet. So this is the real problem, is that very many people in the countryside don't have access to broadband, true broadband. Mm-hmm. This is, I think, a great idea. They're using the unused white space in television signals to provide wireless internet. Targets initially will be 12 states: Arizona, Georgia, Kansas, Maine, Michigan, New York, North Dakota, South Dakota, Texas, Virginia, Washington, Wisconsin. And it's just the beginning. Use that white space. That's one of many, I think, very good solutions to bring more broadband to everybody. And it's sad to say, but Windows Phone 8.1 is officially dead.
Oh man! Nobody saw this coming.
No. This headline really isn't fair because there's still Windows Phone 10, but the Windows Phone 8.1, which actually was really great, came out 3 years ago. But Microsoft is ending support on that. 80% of all, this is so sad. 80% of all Windows powered phones are still running Windows Phone 7, Windows Phone 8, or Windows Phone 8.1. They're now unsupported. Only 20% are running the latest Windows 10. That sounds like a lot, but 20% of all the Windows phones is really only 7 or 8. So, yow. Oh, yow. That's just kicking them when they're down. All right, let me take a little break, and we'll end with good news, like the world's first robot lawyer. And then we're going to wrap it up because it's getting perilously close to... Actually, it's not Game of Thrones time. It's pre-gaming Game of Thrones time, right? What are you going to do to pre-game, Devinder? Are you going to...
I'm going to eat dinner. Eat dinner.
That's good.
That's a good start.
You never want to lunch on an empty stomach.
You don't want to be hungry. Mm-mm.
Exactly.
And you don't want to be eating during the show.
Well, is popcorn okay?
You can't do that.
Can I make a nice big bowl of buttery popcorn?
Butter might be... You'll drool butter everywhere, and you won't be able to find a napkin because you can't keep your eyes off the show. You can't eat. You might choke on a husk. It should be very dangerous.
Jill really dramatized the danger, I thought, quite effectively. It was more of a visual thing.
To make it explicit, that show is really gory, and you might smell some cookies.
Yeah. You don't want to. So maybe you should wait and eat after Game of Thrones.
I'm going to eat before. I'm going to eat pre-Game of Thrones, so I'm all prepared. I have my shirt. I'm going to be bringing down a little tiny dragon, maybe a sword. Who knows? Nice. You have to get kind of all ready. You never know.
I hope you'll wear your Magikarp hat.
Do you think that would be like... I'll wear my Magikarp hat if you wear your sunflower hat. I got mine. But I want a photo.
I am the boy with no name.
Then I'm just wearing the Magikarp hat alone, and I feel silly. Doing it together feels better.
Yeah, but I'm wrong. A daisy has no name.
You're wilting.
God, I'm wilting. It's a wilting daisy. Anyway,
there we go.
What do you got? You got a little. What are you wearing there? What is that, Jill?
She's
the car
to Game of
Thrones. We just talked about that.
I think I'm doing it wrong. It doesn't have the same. I look like a sad babushka daisy.
Like a swallowed your head.
Daisy swallowed my head.
There we go.
Very good. Devendra, you're the only one now.
I got nothing. I have VR headsets. Like, I have a pile of them, but that would make it really hard to do the show.
Don't wear your VR headset.
We'll do the show in VR next time.
Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you look at this and you say, man, I got to hire some better employees, the best way to do it, ZipRecruiter.com. With ZipRecruiter, you're posting on 200-plus job sites, all the social networks, which means, I mean, this is really good. It means you're much more likely to reach that candidate who's going to be the perfect person. ZipRecruiter can make this easy. And don't worry, you're not going to be flooding your inbox with emails or your voicemail with calls, because it all goes into the ZipRecruiter interface, which it makes it incredibly easy to rank, rate, and hire the right person fast. It is the modern way to do hiring. 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in the first 24 hours. So the job applicants will roll in even faster than applicants for the CEO job over there at Uber. I mean, they're going to pour in. For all I know, that's what Uber's using. Lots of big companies do. Look at that. Volkswagen, Burger King, AT&T, TiVo, UPS, PayPal, Dell. They all use ZipRecruiter. Now you can try it free. Free if you go to ZipRecruiter.com/twit. No matter what size your business, hiring the right person makes a big difference. Do it right. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And Gadgets senior editor Devendra Hardawar is here with us. Also from PC Magazine. She's back from her 2 years in India. And we're really glad to see you again, Jill Duffy. And when are you, do you know when you're going to Bucharest? When is that?
First, my partner needs to learn to speak Romanian, but we're aiming for March 2018.
So that's actually a requirement that he has to speak Romanian? That's a hard language.
It's a Romance language. Oh. So he has some French and Italian. Oh, so we're hoping that it will actually not be too much. We keep joking that it's like speaking Italian with a Russian accent, which is not at all true. It's just a joke. Please don't be offended by that joke.
It sounds true.
Yeah, actually, I was really excited because Duolingo just recently released Romanian on its app. So I'm trying to pick up a little bit, too. But
are they sending him to Monterey or something to learn this, the Defense Language Institute? Because they have...
No, in Washington, D.C., or Arlington, Virginia.
Arlington.
Yeah.
Arlington.
Yeah.
They have really high-speed training for the diplomatic corps that they can get up to speed very quickly. Learn all the important things, like no nukes. Nielsen, on-demand audio streaming at a record high. It's up 62.4%. I think a lot of people saw this stat and said, oh, it's all Spotify and music. But I'm not sure it is, because that includes other forms of audio, including podcasts. Nielsen isn't breaking it down. But a big jump in on-demand audio, 62% year-over-year growth. I know it could be, 444. It could be Kendrick Lamar. It could be Ed Sheeran. But I think it's Twit. That's what I'm going to say. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Are anybody going to Black Hat? It's coming up this weekend in Vegas.
No.
Normally we send Father Robert Ballas here. He's a Jesuit priest, and he's actually made a vow of silence. So I don't think he can go.
He's probably the perfect candidate.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
never
true.
Has to make a phone call.
Wouldn't that be interesting? I wonder if he's going. Can he? I don't know if he's allowed to write. I think he kind of has to. He's supposed to like wander around and think deep thoughts. He can't like go to Vegas.
For how long is he going to be silent for?
August.
All of August.
No. He started last month. It's like a 2 or 3 month thing.
That is really impressive.
And if you're following him, though, on Twitter, he is tweeting, but he has got like a bot doing it. Because he didn't want
people... So even messaging would be not allowed.
You can't do that, no. So I have a feeling...
Oh, that's amazing. I wanted to go to a silent retreat for like a few days.
Me too.
So.
I would like to do that.
Yeah, I could do
two days. Down here. Come down here again. They have them in Nicasio over at Spirit Rock. And you wander around and you don't say anything. And they have them all... You can do a weekend, a week, 2 weeks... It would be
giggle, though. I'd get in trouble. I'd probably be thrown out.
Very hard for me not to talk for any length of time. I can barely stop talking when you guys are talking.
Similar.
The Afghan first robotics team, an all-girl team that had been blocked from coming to the United States because terrorism, President Trump has granted them U.S. visas. They twice made the trek across Afghanistan, facing serious danger to apply to their embassy, and they couldn't do it, but the White House has intervened at the same time as he's denying entrepreneur visas for anybody else who wants to come to the United States. So but the girls got in, and they're going to be allowed to compete. I think they're already here, as a matter of fact. The competition is Washington, D.C. teams from 160 countries, students from Syria, Iran, and Sudan. But apparently, something about Afghanistan they just didn't like. They create a robot that sorts balls. It took 6 months to build, and I think you really got to support I think it's great that they're coming. You got to support them. Their girls getting an education in Afghanistan. That's not easy by itself. They're doing technology. They're studying robotics. Good for them. Speaking of robotics, the world's first robot lawyer is now available in all 50 states. I love this subhead at The Verge. Free, strongly worded letters. I don't know if you trust it. It's, but anyway, this is the one that they used in the UK, right, to get you out of traffic tickets. Do not pay, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And now you can use it to fight moving violations here in the States.
Something.
That's cool.
Didn't say it was good. Just say it's doing it. Just said it's doing it.
Well, it'd probably be much cheaper. A lot of people cannot afford
right.
to have legal aid. So right. I think that it's a good beginning point. Right. And we know that robots are actually better at diagnosing many illnesses. So could be better.
One movie that will be at Comic-Con, and a good thing, Steven Spielberg's making Ready Player One. What, isn't that a great novel? Everybody must have read that here. I think Will Wheaton narrated it for Audible.com. So it is going to make a big splash at Comic-Con. And Ernest Cline's really popular. Not popular. I don't know if it was a bestseller in the real world, but among us geeks, it was very widely loved. Mark Rylance, isn't it? Was it?
Yeah.
I think probably, you know, I know everybody I know read it. T.J. Miller's in it. I love Mark Rylance. He was nominated for an Oscar. I think he won an Oscar this year.
Yeah, recently. He's been doing a bunch of stuff with Spielberg recently. I really like Bridge of Spies, which is like a nice slow-paced spy thriller starring him. Yeah,
well, it starred Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
But Rylance had the best role in it, which is a
relatively... the best performance in that film.
Amazing performance, yeah. 22,000 people neglected to read the terms for the Wi-Fi. So they basically agreed to clean public toilets. Purple is a company based in Manchester that does Wi-Fi hotspots for Legoland, Outback, and Pizza Express. They inserted a community service clause into their Wi-Fi agreement terms of service for 2 weeks that required users to do any of the following: cleansing local parks of animal waste, providing hugs to stray cats and dogs, manually relieving sewer blockages, cleaning portable lavatories at local festivals and events, painting snail shells to brighten up their existence, or scraping chewing gum off the streets. There was a prize for anyone who contacted the company and pointed out the clause. Only one person contacted the company. Everybody else agreed. Yeah, why not? So next time you don't read the agreement, you might be agreeing to more than
you really
think.
We really do need to do something about that. I think, you know, before I was a tech person, I was really a writer and editor, and I care a lot about language, and I care a lot about the way that we communicate with one another. And there's just something fundamentally wrong with the way that we handle these terms of service. That it's not clear. Nobody reads it. They're always so long that you can't actually get to anything important anyway. And I frankly feel the same way about a lot of the way that laws are written and legal decisions are written, is they're not written in plain language for people to make sense of them. And I think it's done on purpose, and there's got to be some other better way to legislate that it should be clear. I don't know if legislate is exactly the right way to do it, but there's got to be some company to step up and make these terms clear, short, concise, understandable, so that we make the point that people can consent when they know what they're consenting to.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Mm-hmm.
100%, Jill.
Maybe more like the way Android handles, you know, permission alerts, like this app is going to do this and this and this. There has been some talk about trying to make EULAs a little more human readable, but yeah, I don't know what it's going to take for that to happen.
Right. We're going to need those robot lawyers.
Yeah.
Well, here's good news. AI is coming, and Elon Musk has just told a group of America's governors, we better make up some rules on AI before it's too late. Elon thinks it could be too late. He says AI is the biggest risk we face as a civilization. He spoke at the National Governors Association summer meeting in Rhode Island. He said government has to proactively regulate artificial intelligence before things advance too far. Until people see robots going down the street killing people, they don't know how to react because they seem so ethereal. AI is a rare case where I think we need to be proactive in regulation instead of reactive, because I think by the time we're reactive in AI, it's too late.
The biggest risk for civilization, are you kidding me?
There are some other problems, I think, out there.
We already have shooting us in the street.
Yeah, this giant iceberg the size of Delaware that's headed our way. There's other issues. But
the robots that we program to come shoot us, like, gotta watch out.
We're not going to write those.
He's been saying this for years.
I know.
Too. Like, this isn't a new thing for him. And actually, Stephen Hawking, of all people, is like on this bandwagon too. The thing is, like, we're making fun of it now. And because there's so much else going on in the world that's terrifying. I'm also kind of the mind that there is a point where we need to just like really step back and look at what we're doing philosophically and like logically as well. Like, we are going to start creating these things and we're not going to know what to do with them. But yeah, if you start warning people about robots killing them in the streets, and that sounds like too hyperbolic for right now anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and ethically too, but
yeah,
your point taken, you know, you got to scare people into it first.
Yeah. That's kind of, there was that climate change article from, was it the Atlantic? The one that was basically New York Magazine.
Oh, that was depressing.
Basically. And a lot of climate scientists came back and were like, yeah, some of this is true, but also this seems really overblown. Scaring people probably isn't the best tactic. But yeah, I'm also of the mind that we need to think harder about this technology. Like, what AI will mean for us as humanity, like, once we have these robots doing all this work for us. Maybe not even, like, I'm not personally afraid of robots killing us, but I am, it's pretty clear they're going to take a lot of jobs, and what's going to happen then?
Yeah.
Well, I can barely get Siri to read my music and my shows to me, so I don't think we have to worry now, but I do think that if people aren't, people don't do any, we become so easily complacent, we're kind of lazy by nature, so if we're not really frightened of something, we're not going to do anything to it. And for robotics and AI, we do want to make sure that there's rules in place before we do it. We don't want this to be like testing nukes. We're like, oh, it might burn through the atmosphere, but let's do it anyways and see.
Right.
We want it to be beforehand. So I can understand why they kind of use the fear-based tactics. It works for like politics and poker players. So might work for this too.
All right, I'm going to cheer everybody up. It's National Ice Cream Day today. Go out and get an ice cream cone. Ooh. There's lots of places giving away free ice cream deals, including Mickey D's, Carvel, Dippin' Dots, Steak and Shake, PetSmart. Well, those are only doggy ice cream sundaes. And, of course, world-famous Baskin-Robbins. Ice Cream Day. Tomorrow is Emoji Day, World Emoji Day.
Oh, man.
But you don't like emojis? What's wrong with you?
I need like an emoji of existential dread to describe 2017. I don't know what that looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a World Emoji Day t-shirt. I'll break it out. I'll break it out for tomorrow. Celebrate. Actually, our own Tanya is responsible for one of the new emojis that is appearing this year. She really lobbied hard. We had a guy from the Unicode committee who was talking on the show about all the new emojis. She said there really ought to be a milkshake. Why isn't there a milkshake emoji? and Tanya Hall convinced him to submit it. They accepted it. It's officially called drink with straw or cup with straw, but it sure looks like a milkshake to me, except to Twitter, where it looks like a cool, refreshing glass of water. And emoji one apparently looks like a solo cup, so I don't know what they're drinking in there, but happy World Emoji Day, happy Ice Cream Day, and thank you all for being here. Thank you especially to the returned Jill Duffy. Please come back soon, Jill E. Duffy on Twitter. And don't forget her website. I see it's in here. Do you want to plug the productivity report?
Oh, yeah. So for the last 2 years, I've been doing this thing called productivityreport.org, where I'm reading research about personal productivity and looking to see what's true and what's not true. So things like multitasking, you know, we've all been told, don't do it, don't do it. And it turns out there's a lot of good research that supports it under the right circumstances. So topics like, you know, email and time management, distractions, what kinds of things should you have on your desk to help you focus, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, this is good. And I agree with you. Your most recent article that says Nobody likes open offices, so why do we still use them?
Nobody likes open offices. They're cheap. That's why we use them.
We had an open office, remember, in the old building, the brick house. And everybody in the who had to work in the open office complained because we were always saying, shh, we're. So they now have regular, normal offices. And
that's so nice.
And we're in a little room all alone.
You're happy there.
Yeah. Yeah. This is good. I'm going to read more of this. Productivityreport.org. Thank you, Jill Duffy.
Thank you. See
you soon. We got to get you on before you go to Bucharest. Although Bucharest is not as different a time zone as Chennai.
No, not nearly as bad. I did it. I don't know if you remember, but all of your Indian fans remember. I did it one time from India, and it was from, I think it was from 3:30 in the morning till 5:30 in the morning.
I do remember, and I felt
and
so
terrible. And the sun was coming up behind me. I just treated it like I was going to the airport for an early morning flight. It was, you know, it was kind of fun
and
for
we
me.
Never had
but
her
I could
on
only
again.
Do it once.
Yeah,
yeah, no. I could only do
yeah,
the
that
once.
Was it. We learned. I didn't at the time when we got you on. I found out you were in India. I was blown away. I had no idea. I thought, well, this is very nice of her to do this. So thank you. And now that you're in the Bay Area, it won't be so hard. And I hope we'll get you on a lot more. And of course, we love seeing Georgia Dow. Good luck at finding a home with 2 14-by-11 rooms.
Thank you.
Completely empty, devoid of furniture or any obstructions.
Yeah.
Are you really going to get that? Is that really what you're looking for?
No, really, that's really what we're going to get. Like, we need to have, like, downstairs place for the kids to play, but we can also then hook up the machines as well. So it's also, like, playrooms
for
my boys.
Yeah, sure it is. She's buying a house with 2 VR rooms. You'll find more of Georgia Dow on iMore.com and, of course, anxiety videos. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We had a great studio audience from all over the world. It was really nice to have all of you in here. Appreciate your visit. And the whole family, and they survived mostly. Mom's gone. No, Mom's still here. Who's gone? There's an empty seat. Did one of the children get eaten? Oh, I'm so sorry. But thanks to everybody. If you want to be here in studio, and I guess because it's summertime, we're getting a bumper crop of studio visitors, please email tickets at twit.tv so we can make sure we've got space for you. You can also watch live streams. We do live streams of all of our shows at YouTube. Well, I'll just say go to twit.tv/live and you can choose the channel you watch. You can listen as well. We have live audio streams. And if you are watching live, please join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. You can be part of the conversation. I saw that, Georgia, you went in there and you said you love the chat room. Makes it so much fun.
I do. They're just so nice.
Yeah.
They give you all this great feedback.
They are fun. Well, they love you. They're not nice to me, but they do love you.
I'm sure they're nice to you there.
I try to cheer them up with the daisy hat and stuff, but no.
Didn't work. It's a hard audience.
They're tough. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2200 UTC if you do want to watch live. But if you don't want to, don't worry. On-demand audio and video of every show we do at Twit is available at the website, twit.tv. You can also subscribe. Use whatever, however you get podcasts, just subscribe. Every one of them allows you to download it automatically. And that's the beauty of it. That way you'll wake up every Monday morning with a brand new, fresh Twit ready to listen to. Thanks for being here. I'm Leo Laporte. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye.
Woo.
And then we'll just dub in audience applause. And... Oh, go! Oh, good, good. Doing the Twit.